I'd like to introduce you to Dr. Les Femi, who is a leader in the field of biofeedback and stress management, and in many ways is considered a founder in this field. He, in fact, chaired what is considered to be the first meeting of biofeedback providers that may have existed in this country in 1967, and has gone on to devote his life's work to this subject. After receiving his PhD, he began to do research at the Brain Research Institute at UCLA, interested in information processing in the brain, and he will be talking to you a little bit about his findings. He then went on to become a professor at the State University of New York at Stony Brook, where he began to teach some of the things that he had discovered in graduate school and in his research at UCLA, a Brain Research Institute. And then finally, after teaching and working with students in experiments, testing some of his theories, he went on to a clinical practice, first in Princeton, where his main clinic is, and then expanding to New York. So he has centers in both Princeton and New York where he practices the techniques that he's going to be talking about. Basically, what you will hear on this tape is about 40 minutes during which Dr. Femi is going to discuss the things that he learned, what he learned about the human body, about how we control the human body, how we control physical and emotional pain, the ways in which we can optimize our physical functioning to reduce symptoms of stress, to reduce pain, as I said, both physical and emotional, how we can bring about productivity changes, increases in creativity and a sense of well-being and energy. In other words, he is going to outline for you how he came to the findings that he was then able to put into a system that he calls open focus. And I think what you will find very interesting is that he will give you a good scientific background to illustrate to you how he came to understand these workings and how he was then able to use all this information and put it in a series of exercises so that you at home or in workshops or at one of the centers can learn how to do this all by yourself. And I think that you'll find it very interesting. The second part of the tape will be a 20-minute segment in which questions that you yourself might have will be asked by members of the audience. And hopefully all your questions will be answered in this 20-minute segment. And, of course, we Dr. Femi hopes, if they're not, that you will take time to get in touch with him and ask any questions that you might have. I now introduce you to Dr. Femi.
My name is Les Femi, and I want to start out by thanking you for ordering this tape. This tape, which essentially recounts a rather personal journey of mine beginning in the 60s. It started with a research project that I was involved in for more than 5 years, which investigated information processing in the nervous system of primates. To cut right to the chase, the conclusion of this very long study was that information processing in the visual system of the primate required that a certain amount of synchrony occur in the visual system and in the brain in general. In other words, information processing depended on brainwave synchrony. Well, this was a startling finding to me, and I wondered how I could use this information to improve human information processing. So I embarked on a series of experiments which involved learning to control brainwave amplitude and synchrony among the waves of different lobes of the brain. And in this process, I tested the equipment out myself to make sure that no harm would come to anyone, and I set for myself the goal of producing larger waves, more synchronous waves, in these 5 brain lobes. When I finally got to the point where I could produce more of these waves, a number of very dramatic changes occurred in me. Perhaps the most notable and long-term of these changes was that I dropped a lot of tension that I didn't even know I had before we started training. I thought I was quite relaxed, quite at ease. But after the training, after I changed my brainwave activity so that I was producing a lot more synchrony and a lot more amplitude and a lot more of this activity than I was before, I felt like I was light and clear and even floating. Not quite off the ground, but very much lighter than before. A number of other changes occurred at the same time. I was more sociable, more intimate with my experience and with the experience of others, more intimate with my children and loved ones. And in all, it was a very positive change. Even my ability to teach at the graduate level was improved. My students seemed more interested in what I had to say and came around to office hours more than before. These changes led me to what turned out to be a lifelong investigation of exactly what happened when I produced these large amplitude and synchronous brainwaves. What really changed in me? How could I describe it? How could I get hold of it? How could I teach others to produce this same kind of brainwave activity and bring about these same kinds of very beneficial changes that I had experienced? And it took quite a number of years before I could formulate the change as a change in attention. But clearly, once I had arrived at that level of understanding that I could compare one attentional state to another, it was clear to me that what had changed was my attention to present experience. And from this realization arose an interest in trying to bring about changes in attention independent of brainwave activity. And I noticed that as I developed the vocabulary and exercises to change attention, I found that brainwaves changed at the same time, further supporting the idea that brainwave synchrony and attention were intimately related and not an accidental or irrelevant occurrence. As I taught various people this process, the ones who took to it most easily and most directly were meditators, artists, particularly performing artists, and advanced athletes who were trying to optimize their function, not just learning basic activities, but actually wanted to optimize these activities. And they immediately noticed that their facility with function was improved as they practiced these exercises, which I've come to call open focus exercises, and as they practiced with learning to control brainwave synchrony. A number of other things occurred at the same time. We noticed that headaches went away, anxiety diminished and even disappeared, depression, insomnia, and many other symptoms in all the major systems of the human body also responded very favorably to this kind of training. Gastrointestinal symptoms diminished and disappeared, respiratory symptoms, autonomic nervous system symptoms like cold hands and cold feet, sweating, etc., they all normalized. And central nervous system symptoms also diminished rather dramatically. And I'd already mentioned the motor system or the muscle system having responded favorably. It seemed as if by learning to control brainwave activity, one could move into and out of a level of homeostasis, that is, a level of rest for the various systems of the body that brought about very, very beneficial changes. It was as if we were stuck in a kind of emergency mode orientation to life or to functioning, and we had forgotten how to get back to this level of balanced functioning, balanced hormones, again, that I call normalization of function or homeostasis. a state in which healing naturally occurred, a state in which stress diffused rather naturally without any effortful orientation to bringing that about. About the same time, I had been observing other biological systems, animals, dogs, cats, and I noticed they spent a great deal of time during the day, many, many hours, just resting, not sleeping, kind of lazy-eyed and just being still. A cat might sit on the arm of a sofa and purr. A dog might just lie on the ground with its paws under him or her and just be looking, but not really trying to see anything. And I'd come to find out that all the animals on the planet spend considerable times in this mode at which I imagined that all the systems of their bodies normalized, got back to zero bias. That is, not biased toward emergency, not biased toward rest, but sort of in this middle level of arousal from which it would be easy to move in either direction. And I noticed it was associated with a different kind of attention also. And particularly when I practiced this myself, I noticed that I was able to be aware of more in the periphery of my attention when I was producing these synchronous brainwaves and when I was practicing certain exercises, again, that I now call open focus exercises. So there was an expanding awareness to include not only what I was centered on, but also into the periphery of my attention, so that while I was thinking, for example, I might be aware of seeing my environment, hearing all around, and feeling my whole body, tasting and smelling, and having a sense of presence in this moment, without interrupting significantly or my thought process. It was a different way of thinking in that I didn't narrow focus on my thoughts as I usually had done, but I noticed it was a much more beneficial way of thinking. Thoughts actually would diffuse and disappear without trying to avoid them or control them or make them go away. And it was a way of releasing my body from the stresses associated with these thoughts. As I proceeded with this training process, training others, at first people who happened to be interested in this brainwave training process, and then gradually more and more people who were suffering from some form of symptomology that I had associated with stress, as I proceeded with this, I found that this training process and the practicing of altering attention from this more diffuse peripheral awareness to a more narrow-focused objective awareness, as is appropriate in emergency, I noticed that symptoms disappeared. And even when people did nothing to try to relax, or directly affect their symptoms, their symptoms disappeared. In time, I began to realize that the dissolving pain process also was associated with a different form of attention, a form of attention associated with peripheral, expanded peripheral awareness. An event that happened to me brought this home most clearly. I was working at NASA Ames Research Laboratory in California as a research fellow, and I was suffering at the time from the pain associated with kidney stones, which, as some of you may know, is a very extreme form of pain. It was so extreme that it broke through all of my defenses. I had no way to control it, and I actually shuddered when I experienced this pain. My whole body went into a shudder, involuntary shudder. And it was so painful, and I was so upset by this pain. emotionally and just directly by the pain itself, that I was considering extreme measures to end the pain. No drugs worked to control the pain. No drugs that I had been prescribed or had tried. And as I was considering this pain and how to deal with it, I tried distracting myself by actually hurting other parts of my body, trying to draw my attention away from this pain. In any case, none of my pain control strategies, my old pain control strategies, worked for me. And I realized that something altogether different would have to be tried. And all of a sudden, I realized that I hadn't tried entering into the pain. All my strategies involved removing myself from the pain, distancing myself, resisting, avoiding, distracting myself from the pain. So instantly, knowing that I'd be too afraid of this pain to do it slowly, instantly I overturned my old strategy and I turned into the pain. I dove right into the heart of the pain and I immersed myself in it. I became one with it as best I could. And instantly, my inner life brightened. That is, it was like a light came into my awareness. And there was no pain. It was as if a miracle had occurred. I knew what had occurred. I knew what I did. And I came out into this awareness, which is, let's say, as enlightening as anything I had ever experienced in my life. And it lasted for one day. While I was relating to people, I was lighter physically and brighter. And this is after I'd had this earlier experience with brainwave training while I was a professor at the State University in New York. The next day, the pain started again, and I instantly dove right back into the heart of the pain and again came into this bright light, which again lasted for a considerable amount of time. In any case, it took me a few years to realize, to process this event and understand what had occurred in relation to attentional change. In fact, I now see two major dimensions of attention. One is how narrow attention is at one end of this dimension and how broad it is at the other end of this dimension. How much peripheral awareness it contains. And a second dimension, which is independent of the first one, is how objective I am, that is, how remote I am from my experience, and at the other end of the same dimension, how immersed I am in my experience, how much at one with my experience I am, as I was with this pain. After leaving the university, I moved into a clinical setting in which I applied these skills, these techniques, brainwave training techniques, multi-channel brainwave training techniques, and the beginnings of the open focus exercise process to a clinical population. Clearly, the people who, the clients of mine who came for biofeedback training did not intend to have the symptoms they had. They didn't set out at some point in their life to become tense, to become stressed, and to have a wide variety of symptoms. But in fact, they did end up having many symptoms. And the question was, why? Why do so many of us come down with symptoms? Well, symptoms like anxiety, depression, insomnia, and various kinds of physical pain and discomfort. And to me, the answer to this question depended on what happened to these same symptoms when I taught my clients how to narrow their focus, more clearly, better even than they had been doing, how to diffuse their attention, open their awareness to include a lot of peripheral experience while they were paying attention. As I taught them to objectify their experience and to enter into their experience. What happened to these symptoms? Well, in every case, with no exception, there was an amelioration of symptomology. That is, the symptoms decreased and even disappeared altogether as they learned to practice this attentional flexibility, which is at the heart of a healthy system. Attentional flexibility requires that the appropriate form of attention be applied to the appropriate condition. And when nothing particular is happening, we observe animals just rather naturally gravitating toward this homeostasis, which is associated with a very diffuse attention and a very immersed attention. That is, they seem to be immersed in their own experience at that time. Their own experience, including all their senses, not just physical, although that too. So, having this experience with so many clients gradually encouraged me to develop further this system of exercises called Open Focus, which I am sharing with you now. And it is now 30 years since I began this research, and the fact that brainwave activity is directly connected with attention, and that brainwave flexibility is associated with attentional flexibility, makes EEG biofeedback training or brainwave biofeedback training a crucial element in learning to optimize function. It has shown itself to be effective and beneficial to remediate symptoms of many different kinds, to avoid the recurrence of these symptoms, and to optimize function. In answer to the question, we never set out to become tense and stressed and have symptoms. How did this come about? The answer gradually emerged that it came about because we became rigid in the way we paid attention to the world. We tended to pay attention to the world in emergency-oriented way, which is narrow focus, objective, and effortful. Now, I've been talking about this in a general way, about open focus and other forms of attention in a general way, and I'd like to describe now how my clients have come to learn open focus and how they use it as a strategy for managing experience in their everyday lives. It goes something like this. When one narrow focuses on something, let's say a pain or anxiety or an unpleasant situation, external situation, when one narrow focuses on it, that's all there is in one's mind, in one's awareness. And therefore, it has a great deal of impact on them because that's all there is. On the other hand, if one's attention is very broad and inclusive of all the senses, seeing and hearing and feeling all around and tasting and smelling, and a sense of nowness and letting thoughts come and go. And when one is aware of the space in which all these sensations exist, then this untoward or unpleasant event, the anxiety or the unpleasant external event, is a small part of the totality of one's awareness, and therefore it has less power over them and has less power to affect them and to cause a response, cause them to overreact. So one of the major reasons to learn to open one's focus is to take the pressure off one one's system to overreact to situations. If you don't want to overreact to a situation, don't narrow focus on it. In fact, center it in your awareness if it requires that much attention, but be sure that your peripheral awareness is full of your other sensory experience, so that this unpleasant event becomes a small part of the totality of the experience. And it's much easier to take a better perspective on it and how to deal with it. Similarly, if one distances oneself from an unpleasant event, which is what we tend to do, which our society encourages, in fact, teaches us to do, we could distract ourselves, narrow focus away to something else that is less unpleasant or more pleasant, and so think that we have control over the unpleasant event, but we've expended effort, we've tried to resist the experience of the unpleasant event. And as a result, as we continue to do this in our everyday lives, we expend more and more effort associated with resistance and avoidance and denial and distraction and so forth, until most of our energy is oriented toward maintaining some avoidance or resistance from unpleasant experiences, unpleasant memories, unpleasant conditions in our lives, unpleasant feelings in our body, etc. So as we continue to use these avoidance strategies, we become drained and burned out because of the cumulative effort that's required to maintain this avoidance process. On the other hand, if we learn to merge with these unpleasant experiences, just like we merge with pleasant experiences, we find that these pleasant experiences diffuse and disappear over time, and so too do unpleasant experiences. As we merge with them, they diffuse and disappear. And we don't have to maintain some ongoing resistance, avoidance, or distraction strategy. Thus, by merging with our experience and letting it diffuse, we end up free and clear and ready to interact with the next set of stimuli that become available to us. So we have strategies associated with these other forms of attention that are immediately obvious and beneficial. And those of our clients who became proficient at using open focus voluntarily, intentionally, found these strategies very useful in their everyday life. Over time, they actually brought about important and desirable changes in their personality. An interesting observation came into being as I practiced with brainwave biofeedback and with these exercises, these open focus exercises. Gradually, I became more aware of space. And as I emphasized space in the exercises, the early exercises, I noticed that people seemed to have more quick results and more complete results. That is, just by increasing awareness of the space, in a sense, modality, in seeing the space between objects, in hearing the silence in which sounds occur, in feeling the space between and around body parts, or the space that the body occupies, in experiencing the space in which we smell and taste, and the space or silence in which internal dialogue or visual images occur, and the space or timelessness in which a sense of presence occurs. As these spaces came more into central awareness, there was a more rapid release of the kind of gripping associated with emergency mode attention. And space gradually became a major feature of the exercises, and increased the rate at which beneficial results were experienced. I also noticed along the way that when we emphasize a feeling space, that is, not just visualizing space or hearing silence or tasting or smelling space or thinking about space, but actually also feeling space, as we emphasize that, many feeling-related symptoms like pain and emotion were diminished and alleviated, so that anxiety responded more quickly to feeling space than if we just visualize space or thought about it. There are a number of other observations along the way which I've written about in the various materials that are available about open focus. And in general, along the years since its early development, I've come to the conclusion that brainwave training, although very helpful, is not a crucial component in the learning of attentional flexibility and in the reduction of various stress-related and rigidity of attention-related symptoms. And the tapes and the taped exercises can bring about these very same changes, these positive changes, and lead to alleviation of symptoms and prevention of symptoms and optimization of function. I have underemphasized the kind of control that is possible, particularly in relation to emotions. Most people struggle with emotions in one way or another. We all have emotions that we avoid, resist, deny, would like to distract ourselves from. But learning these techniques, learning how to bring these same feelings and unwanted or unpleasant feelings into a large awareness in which they are not alone. They are a small part of a large experience, a large peripheral awareness. Then they are easily tolerated and they easily are integrated and allowed to diffuse. And the problem of controlling and managing emotional experience becomes rather easy and pleasant.
Dr. Femi, what other kinds of biofeedback are there? And do I need to do biofeedback in order to learn this?
Biofeedback is a general term for learning to control physiological processes like muscle tension, blood flow in the hands or any part of the body, rate of sweating, brainwave activity, and there are other forms of biofeedback as well. When one looks at a biofeedback instrument, one sees what's currently happening to the body and to body processes. So with guidance from a professional who understands how to teach this, a kind of control over those same body processes, the person sees when they succeed and when they fail, and as a result, gains confidence that they have some control over their own experience, which is associated with the functioning of their body processes. So,
do I need it to learn the process?
You don't need biofeedback directly, because it turns out that what changes these various body processes is the change in attention. I've had many clients come in who thought they knew how to relax, for example, and when I measured their muscle tension in different parts of their body, and I asked them to relax, they actually tensed up and thought they were relaxing. And when I introduced the ideas of attention to them and I asked them to change the way they pay attention from narrowing on the meter needle or the numbers associated with their muscle tension, and ask them to just center on that information but bring in the whole laboratory environment, and allow themselves to experience their whole body and the sounds around them, and see all around as well as seeing the meter or the numbers, then of course they changed. Their muscle tension went down, and they saw that by changing their attention, they had more control over their physiology, in fact, with all the biofeedback instruments, than they did when they tried to implement what they thought was relaxation.
Will the tapes do that for me alone?
The tapes by themselves will help you to learn attentional flexibility, which is the heart of physical control, physiological control. One controls one's own physiology by changing the way they pay attention. When they pay attention in emergency mode, then their body responds to support emergency mode functioning. Their muscles tighten up, their blood flow changes, their heart rate increases, and so on. When they change their attention to the form that's associated with rest and normalization of function, what I call homeostasis, where healing takes place, recharging of batteries, then and balancing of many systems of the body, then of course muscle tension goes down, blood flow shifts again more appropriate to digestion and healing, and sweating reduces and brainwaves change. So we control our physiology by the way we pay attention, and that's the point.
So, Dr. Sammy, will open focus training help me with things like shoulder pain and neck pain from stress?
Yes. Even those pains that are not due to simple stress, like, for example, I've had many clients who injured their backs weightlifting, and they've come for other symptoms. They've argued, well, I hurt my back weightlifting, so I don't think biofeedback can help me for that, but it can help me for headaches and gastrointestinal problems like irritable bowel syndrome or whatever. Even those clients, their symptoms have responded to this biofeedback process and to open focus training. We've had many clients post-injury accidents of various kinds, automobile accidents, falls, and so on, and have responded very well to this type of training.
How do I actually practice this at home?
Well, generally, you listen to tapes, and there are a series of tapes. There are at present more than 18 tapes, and there's a series in which you enter into the process. You begin with tape number one, which provides an introduction, and then go on to the next tape, and so on, spending about a week with each tape. And in the process, you will learn how to widen your attention to include peripheral experience, and learn how to immerse yourself in your experience to dissolve specific pains like shoulder pain or back pain or whatever.
If you're teaching me how to relax, would it also improve my productivity?
Well, this goes beyond relaxation. Relaxation is just one of the many symptoms that are associated with attentional flexibility, and particularly diffuse intuit kind of awareness. So there are many shifts in the body systems, not just relaxation. And of course, you probably would agree that you wouldn't want to get too relaxed. But on the other hand, you wouldn't want to be too tense either. So what's nice about this training is it teaches one to find a middle level of arousal that is appropriate for most tasks we engage in. But when an emergency does occur, you're in an ideal position to rev your body up and to enter into perhaps a more effective emergency mode condition than you could have had you been stuck in emergency mode all along, because your batteries are fully charged, you have a lot more energy to bring to the situation, because you have been spending time in this open focus way of paying attention.
Would I be able to do it when I do other things, or just when I listen to these tapes?
The whole idea is to develop the skills while listening to the tapes under ideal conditions at home, and then to transfer it gradually into your everyday life. Now, a lot of the transfer occurs rather naturally. And in fact, while I'm using the word naturally here, I want to say that this way of paying attention that I call open focus is very natural. I believe it's the kind of attention that a baby has, and the kind of attention that we, as we get enculturated to our society, that we learn how to leave and to narrow focus on one sense or another sense. This is a long period of training to get out of this symphony of sensory experience, which is appropriate. appropriate to a baby.
I've heard that couples and co-workers have used this technique to get closer and to communicate better. How does that work?
Well, you could imagine that when two people who are living together both are very narrow focused, and when they attend to something, that's all there is in their awareness, and when they're annoyed at their mate or anyone they're in relationship with, it's over-amplified. Whatever it is they're disturbed about is over-focused on, and therefore they overreact to those things. And it's very hard to keep things in the perspective. Yes, the toothpaste tube squeezed in the middle instead of rolled up from the bottom is an annoyance to some people. But when they experience that in open focus, and it's only a small part of their total awareness, they can take it in their stride much better. They might explain that they would prefer it being done in a different way, but it wouldn't be the crisis that it would be if they focused on it, and that's all there is in their awareness, is the toothpaste tube and their very large reaction to that, because they narrow focused on it.
This sounds terrific, Dr. Femi. Is it hard to learn open focus? Do I need special skills or a lot of time in order to learn it?
Well, I haven't found it being difficult to learn. As a matter of fact, everyone that comes to our clinic learns it rather easily. Anyone who sticks with the process can learn it. In fact, I feel it's natural, and it's just going back to a natural flexibility that all animals, for example, have. In the case of animals, it's more built into the system that they go back and forth between emergency mode and hangout mode, homeostatic mode. With people, because we've been acculturated to stay focused and stay on target, you know, holding on to our objectives and so on, we just need a period of practice at home. I recommend 2 to 3 times a day. While you're going through the tapes, and thereafter, as needed. So it wouldn't take long at all to achieve many of the benefits. To get really good at it might be something that's ever deepenable. You know, you can get better and better as you grow older, and you find yourself more at the heart of your own experience and more appropriate in the way you pay attention in different situations. It's a learning experience. All learning requires learning how to pay attention to what, in what order. That's what learning is. And having an option as to how to pay attention is a very valuable asset.
You've talked a lot so far about relieving physical symptoms. I have the tendency of bottling up my emotions. I would like to handle it differently, and was wondering if open focus can help me do that.
Imagine that when you're narrow focused, you're constantly trying to put all your attention on what presently is in your awareness, and as you direct your awareness to different things, you're ignoring or excluding everything else. That act alone causes you to prevent emotions from also being present. Opening your awareness would mean including not only all your senses, distant senses like hearing and seeing and so on, but also internal senses, which include feeling, you know, all your feelings, your emotions. So by virtue of the fact that you expand your peripheral awareness, you're allowing your emotions to become part of your everyday life and part of your experience, whereas narrow focus causes you to just notice the visual aspects of something or other aspects of an external or internal environment, but rather limited in scope, excluding one's feelings and emotions. So you might end up being a person who, quote, unquote, bottles up their emotions without even having any real need to do that, just because of your over indulgence in narrow focusing your attention. Now, if you're interested in reversing this process, just expanding your attention alone will take care of that. And as these emotions become unbottled and arise into awareness, they arise into an awareness of a much larger field of experience, and therefore these emotions are not so scary because they're a small part of a larger experience. And therefore, you're allowing a kind of catharsis to occur without any specific effort to rummage around and bring up things. They just naturally float to the surface and are easily integrated in an open focus awareness.
I would like to ask you a few more questions on how open focus can help with emotional difficulties. For people who have experienced some sort of emotional, abusive situation while growing up, or some traumatic experience, can open focus help with very serious situations like that? And can it be combined with psychotherapy?
It seems to me any successful therapy has to bring one back into a way of functioning that is more optimal. And to optimize function means to be more flexible. So you could function in a number of different ways. You have more breadth and depth to your performance. Any successful therapy would have to include increasing attentional flexibility. And any therapy that just concentrated on information or content or specific occurrences without supporting a change in the way a person approached those situations, the way he saw them, the way he felt about them, the way he attended to them fundamentally, would be a therapy that I would question the value of. So I am interested in aligning this process of increasing attentional flexibility with any therapy. So psychotherapy, which is more close to a kind of talk therapy for most people as it's practiced today, and behavior therapy, and various forms of analysis, to the degree that they incorporate principles of attention training, is the degree that they make themselves more effective. For example, if one was very narrow focused and a therapist could help that person focus in on a very unpleasant event that might have occurred in his or her childhood, at that point, this flood of experience will be coming up into awareness when a person is very narrow focused, so that he would tend to overreact to this catharsis, this welling up of experience, and could become even more sensitized to that material and more interested in avoiding it and driving it out of his awareness instead of easily taking it into a much broader awareness and allowing it to be integrated and diffused. So just digging for unpleasant events in childhood alone is not good psychotherapy. It's preparing the person with an orientation to expanding awareness and bringing that unpleasant, traumatic emotional experience into this larger field of awareness where it can be integrated. That makes for good therapy.
A question I have is, as I get older, my sense of well-being, or the sense of well-being I had when I was younger, seems to be diminished somewhat. And it's not that anything is wrong, but I feel that I tend to wear out more easily, and the joy of everyday life sometimes seems to be absent. Can open focus speak to that?
It is my observation that by virtue of staying in narrow focus for prolonged periods, we put a lot of energy into the effort to remain in this way of emergency attending. We're constantly churning our body to maintain this emergency mode of attending. And as a result, we burn out. Instead of, like the animals, spending some time in emergency mode and then returning to a more integrated mode of experiencing, letting everything normalize, I call it a zero bias state where healing occurs and balancing occurs, and then returning to one or more levels of emergency mode functioning. So as you allow your body to dip back into homeostasis and be flexible again and come back into various degrees of emergency mode functioning, you will regain that energy, that sense of zest. The colors will seem more vivid and brighter, and in fact, your whole mind will experience a brightening effect.
Dr. Femi, have you noticed any changes in your own life as a result of practicing open focus?
Many, many, many changes. Even the early changes that I had mentioned earlier on this tape have progressed and improved. I would say easily that I'm healthier, I'm happier, I'm more in touch with my own experience. I easily move from narrow focus to more diffuse awareness, and from objectivity to intuitness in ways I've never been able to before. And I look forward to further improvement and gains in attentional flexibility.
Thanks for answering our questions, Dr. Femi. I certainly appreciate the time you spent with us.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, thank you for being interested in what I have experienced and continue to experience as a most meaningful function of my life, which is the attentional function, attentional learning, attentional flexibility, and letting go of attentional rigidity in all its various forms. Thank you for coming and listening.